702 and Cape Talk.
Book of the Week.
It's a Thursday, and on a Thursday on the Midday Report, we speak to the author of a local non-fiction book. Have you ever been to the Mai Mai Market? Because that's what this book is about. It's called Mai Mai, the History and Heritage of the Kwa Mai Mai Market. And it tells the story of the market, but really it tells the story about cultural memory, sacredly preserved and transported to new geographies, how they can be used as a cultural weapon to resist subjugation or as an economic weapon to turn those priceless traditions into tradable commodities. And the author, Dr. Sipho Sithole, arguing in the book that Kwa Mai Mai is very much the embodiment of everything Joburg is meant to be. The city of gold, a place where dreams deferred come true. It's a constellation of people's cultures imbued with beautiful memories of life in villages, left behind but cherished by those who refuse to forget. A great pleasure to welcome Dr. Sipho Sithole to the Midday Report today. Good afternoon, Doctor. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Mandy. I think you got it. You summed it up very well. Actually, we can even say goodbye now.
Excellent. And everybody go read the book and visit the market. I think that's the essence, right? So Kwa Mai Mai has its origins in the gold rush, in the migrant labor market. It was once a horse stable, then a men's hostel, but now it's so much more.
Yes, it is so much more. You're correct. And it dates back from just before the First World War, the story of this compound in Kwa Mai Mai, when the two mining companies, Jubilee Mining Company and Salisbury Mining Company, went under before the First World War, and then the compound was then taken over by the city. But it was not this current site. It was a compound just up the road from where this current site is. It was only in 1927 that we began to see the city engineer's drawings about the possible move of the migrants who were living in that compound to the current compound, which was then which used to be a horse stable. And you would understand and appreciate that why was that a horse stable is because at the discovery of gold, there were no automobiles. So the gold rush, as you were saying, in your opening, people coming from all over the world, they were coming with horse-drawn carriages. Even some of them were oxen-drawn carriages coming to set up base to dig and find the gold. So it was only in 1947 that the compound then became operational, then they moved them from the old site to the current site.
And it has now become a refuge for those who left their villages to look for formal employment, who abandoned their search when it became clear that such opportunities in the formal economy were beyond their reach. So instead, they've created this culture-based economy where they have effectively turned the class theory upside down, as you argue, in the sense that control over the means of produce has been prized away from the dominant class by the rural migrant working class. Explain that for us.
Well, in scholarly terms, we call it epistemic disobedience, when you're basically just giving the middle finger to whoever thought that they were in control of your destiny. And so they come here at the turn of the 20th century. They come here as village migrants, really to sell their labor. And I say to the cheapest possible bidder, because they were being exploited anyway. And they come here unwanted but needed for their labor, because the aristocrats and the capitalist construct really didn't want them to be in the city, but they needed their labor because at that time they didn't the mining, for instance, did not have this machinery that they have now. So they needed real men underground digging and getting that gold up to the above ground. But as fate would turn, they found themselves no longer working, no employment. And they had to dig deep into their cultural memory to then ask themselves, who are we? Where do we come from? What is it that we can turn into cultural goods and services?
Right.
And the obvious thing was really their traditional regalia, whether they were Zulu, Xhosa, Pedi, and so forth, including African traditional medicine, because some would get sick sitting in the compound and they didn't believe in doctors and clinics. And suddenly there was this services that was being offered by those who had learned to use traditional herbs to treat that. And that's why we then find this concentration of the people under the bridge, almost forgotten, but and existing beyond.
You speak about almost forgotten, and the story you tell about Kwa Mai Mai, it's so layered, it's so textured, but it also has a darker side. The members are in a constant battle to be acknowledged by the city that actually created it. You speak about how this is an ideal tourist stop, but the city is refusing to give it that status. Why is that?
Well, firstly, I think there's a section in the book, I don't know where in the chapter, where I say that Albert Street, a drive down Albert Street gives an impression of a drive gone too far, suggesting a U-turn back to the hustle and bustle of the city. Because when you go down that Albert Street, the Albert Street takes you straight into the gate of Mai. If you don't know the place, you think you have gotten lost, because the journey to the gate is nothing what you would expect. The street is derelict. You've got all sorts of things I can't talk about on air that would actually think that we have gotten lost, because the city has not made that a tourist corridor that actually guides you to keep driving until you get to the gate. As a matter of fact, you want to turn back because you think, no, that's not where I'm going. It's been left to become what it is. During my research, there was a section of the compound itself that had not had electricity for 3 years. Now, you can imagine that the compound, people live and trade there. When you walk into the hostel itself, you see this front store of the cultural goods and stuff, but there is a wall which they have created, and behind that is a bed, a kitchen, and everything, and then they've created also a mezzanine, a makeshift mezzanine, where they have another kitchen at the top. So you've got families, 5, 6 families living there, but what you see is what they said. So I mean, even the traders even took the city and the Johannesburg Property Company, which has treated those people with great, I mean, gross indignity. They took them to the Human Rights Commission. Not even completed yet, but it's a sad story. The book itself is a good history if you want to know about the discovery of Johannesburg, the labor migration, who came, how many thousands in this year, and how they've survived this city. I mean, I call the migrants the birds of passage.
Yes.
Who refused to fly away from a city that pretended they did not exist.
Well, Doctor, when I asked my colleague Clement Maniatella on 702 a bit earlier if he'd ever been, he said no, he was too scared to go, and I haven't been. So hopefully you'll take us both, and hopefully we'll be able to change perceptions of Kwa Mai Mai.
Yes, I've done that even with another bookstore downtown Joburg, Bridge Books, which is a great bookstore owned by an American. Yeah, we did a tour after the discussion on the book. We did a tour of Kwa Mai Mai. All I can say is that it is safer than Maboneng. You're not going to have your phone smashed while waiting for an Uber.
Doctor, sorry to leave it there. Dr. Sipho Sithole, thank you so much. A fascinating conversation. And the book really is a journey into the market, but into migrant labor in South Africa and so much. It's called Mai Mai, The History and Heritage of the Kwa Mai Mai Market.